learning objectives for those of you that want CPD. At the end of this session, you will get sent a feedback form. We really do like you to give us that feedback. It's invaluable for us in designing further sessions for you. And also, we trigger the feedback forms from the people. Sorry, we trigger the CPD forms from the feedback form. So anyone who wants CPD forms, that's how you get it. Key learning objectives today are on the screen. I think I can't stress too much how important maintaining an income is, and you're going to see some great demonstrations of that in practice today. Particularly, John's going to show us how he uses cash flow planning with advisors all the time to identify the explicit need. The way we're going to run the session today, a little bit different from usual. Colin Baxter, who runs an excellent business in Lincoln, writes a lot of protection business, is going to take you through his simple process, because one of the things we found out, I'll come to some research in a minute. In fact, no, now's probably as good a time. When we did the first Consumer Duty Alliance Protection Forum, we asked the attendees what would make them make protection part of their core proposition. 57% came back and said being able to demonstrate why clients need protection. So this section is as a direct reaction to that session. I must admit, I was fascinated by some research that came out from another organisation earlier in the week, which said that something like 86% of wealth advisors were giving protection advice. With the greatest of respect, I think that probably should have meant 86% of advisors know they should give protection advice. I'm really not convinced that, well, the market data on business sold simply doesn't stand that stat up. The fact that you're here today means if you come to this session, you clearly want to address that. So it's great to have you with us. Just a bit more into the findings. We then went down and said, OK, so what's the biggest blocker? And it was really interesting. Even numbers of you saying that, you know, protection is too complicated and you didn't have the necessary specialist knowledge. And the other side was saying a lack of tools and training. We are going to try and address both of those in the next 52 minutes. So that's enough from me, other than to say, yeah, we are going to start, as I say, slightly differently. Colin is going to take you through his simple protection advice needs analysis process. Then we'll allow a little bit of time for questions for Colin. Then John's going to show you it in the context of cash flow planning, which really does drive it home. And huge numbers of wealth advisors are using cash flow planning today. I just think it's almost making a bit more use of something you've already got. And then to come back and address the question of how easily you can deliver quality protection and value that is really important to recognise current FCA requirements. Post-consumer duty, the obligation is to look at what's best value for the customer, and the FCA definition now means that value must be more than price. So you've got to look at what the other factors are that would indicate value. And towards the end of the session, I'm going to show you how incredibly easy it can be to produce analysis in just a few minutes that shows that actually the best value policy is rarely the cheapest, and how you can achieve absolutely better consumer outcomes by going through a very simple process. So that really is enough from me. I'm going to come off screen and I'm going to invite Colin. Would you like to introduce yourself first? And then can you share with the audience your experience, how you approach protection and how you make it core to what you do?
Okay, yeah.
Mr. Baxter.
Colin Baxter, Director of Mortgage Advisor at Mortgage & Lincoln. I've been dealing with protection for about 23 years now, allied to mortgages, and it is a key part of my business. Each year I write between 300 and 350 new policies, and my two-year knockoff rate is I've got 99.4% persistency. So for every 600 policies I write in 2 years' time, 596 are still in force. And I say that simply to say that make protection stick. This is really good because my bit is the tactical bit. I'm going to show you how to win the battle of signing protection up. And then John's bit is a strategic bit, shows you how in the lifetime of your client it all works. I'm going to mention a couple of documents quite a lot, and I have sent them across to Ian, and I'm quite happy he shares them with everybody. Okay, no problem whatsoever. So my process, and I do have a process, and I think the first key thing is when writing protection is to have a process that you follow with every client. I probably follow this with 96, 97% of my clients with very good results. And when I'm talking to a client, I set up protection from the first bit, from the terms of business letter. But terms of business letter, as part of my opening spiel, I explain to the clients that I look at all the quality providers for protection. So point one, it's in there. Bearing in mind, clients have come to me for mortgages in the way that have come to you for investment advice. So protection isn't their first key thing, but I mention it from point one. When I'm going through my questionnaire with my clients, by the way, I call the fact find the questionnaires, it's a softer word. When I go through my questionnaire with my clients, we get to the first page, we talk about do they smoke or do they vape. If they don't smoke or vape, I say to them, great, you live longer and your protection is cheaper. If they do smoke or vape, I explain to them it can affect the cost of the cover. But key thing, I explain to them, come back to me after you've stopped for a year and I'll make it cheaper. So at this point, I'm assuming we're going to have the conversation in depth about their protection. And I guess for me, a lot of this is about assumptions. Having completed the questionnaire, and this is the bit that I think interests Ian for this session, I complete a budget planner or affordability calculator with all my clients. 2 pages long. As I say, Ian's going to share it with you, quite happy he does. And you'll see it covers everything from the costs of running their property, so council tax, water, gas, electric, mobile phones, Spotify, food, all the usual stuff, running the cars. Key thing with this, of course, is that whether they have got a mortgage or not got a mortgage, these are costs they're going to have throughout their life. There's this sort of urban myth that your biggest cost of living is your mortgage. It isn't. It is your cost of living. And when I used to do investment advice, which is a long time ago, 25 years ago, if you took the mortgage out of people's outgoings, in those days, it only reduced the outgoings by about 25%. Okay. We talk about things like cost of childcare. And in my questionnaire, fact find, if they've got children, we talk about how long the children are dependent for, the actual costs of having children, all those sorts of things. And then key bits in my questionnaire that really make people aware of just the breadth of this. We talk about holidays in detail. We talk about gyms and sports and hobbies in detail. We talk about eating out in detail. Birthday and Christmas presents. You'd be amazed how many of my clients spend between £100 and £200 a month on birthday and Christmas presents. And those are things that they don't want to stop doing. Clothes. And a really simple line but has great effect is pets. If we did a straw poll around here, I'd guess that most people on this call have got pets. And most people with pets have got pet insurance. And the maximum that I've got clients spend on pet insurance at the moment is £190 a month. If you then talk to them about their existing protection, they're spending £15 on life cover, it puts it into perspective. Okay. So my budget planner, and I call it a budget planner rather than a cash flow planner, looks at where they are today in some detail. Hairdressers, barbers, charity donations, union fees, and any others. And others can include clients who collect action figures at £500 a month. I've got one client who had to have a two-bedroom house so they could keep their shoe collection in the other bedroom. All sorts of things. It's amazing. Having completed that, and I have to stress to you, this is an in-depth document, but it takes about 10 minutes. Okay. Having completed that, I then look at what do the clients bring into the house now, whether that's pension income, so I've got people who are ex-forces pensions, whether that's salary, whatever their sources of income, we look at how much actually comes in. And then I look at how much is going out on all of the costs we've talked about. And I always adjust it and add a bit extra on, because most of us miss things off budget planners. I think if you sit down and wrote down on a bit of paper what you spend every week, and then actually compare that to your bank statement, it doesn't always tie up. Okay. So what we've ended up here is a very, very detailed budget planner. And you'll see when you get a copy of this, that even though I don't do investments, it's actually got three columns: current costs, costs for the new mortgage, and anticipated changes. So from the point of view of financial planning, anticipated changes for me will be after retirement. Because if you're actually doing retirement planning with clients, then the biggest thing, I guess, is how much they're actually going to need when they retire. Not for the trip around the world and all those sorts of wonderful things that we often talk about, but just for the basic living costs. So having agreed a budget, and I do work very, very carefully to budget, and I explain to my clients that I work to budget. I have been known in my side of the industry to say to clients to walk away from a property because they can't afford it. Having gone through the budget, then talked about mortgages, which obviously didn't involve this, I then have my life planner, which when you get a copy of this from me, and it's called an additional information for GI sheet, which is a very big title, for something that talks about buildings and contents, government and personal protection. The purpose of this, I'm going to go through the personal protection section in some detail, which is two pages. But just talking about selling protection, because protection is sold, okay? One of the biggest things that, in my experience in this industry, we tend to get hung up about is objection handling. Okay, and I have a really, really effective objection handling technique, which means I get my retaliation in first. I'm quite happy to do a session on this because most people really like this bit. Okay, so when I get to this point where I'm talking about protection, I first of all state that I talk about claims that we've had as an industry, as a company, I should say. We've had 27 claims that we know of for critical illness alone since 2016. In fact, we have one paid out this week, and it's got prostate cancer. So I've got lots of background of explaining to clients the claims experience and what it actually means. So I stress at this point that the biggest thing I look at is claims payment. Not interested if somebody's cheaper, I look at claims payment, and I look at, do they pay for the things you're likely to claim for? And I explain to clients that when I come back to them, I'll be showing them why I'm recommending them the best cover on the market, not the cheapest. And I use this marvellous tool called Protection Guru Pro to look at things like critical illness cover, which Ian, I use on an almost daily basis, okay, to show clients why quality of cover is so important. Okay, I then talk to them about statistics. The statistics I use are, we all have a 1 in 14 chance of dying before retirement, which is why life cover is ridiculously cheap, which it is. After retirement, of course, it narrows to a 1 in 1 chance of dying, but before retirement, it's 1 in 14. Explain, we've got a 1 in 8 chance of having a serious critical illness, and the 5 critical illnesses that pay off 90% of claims are cancer, heart attack, stroke, multiple sclerosis, and benign brain tumour. Then the one that not everyone's aware of, which I think is very important in financial planning, we all have a 1 in 5 chance of having a serious accident or sickness. Those who do, half of work for 6 months or more, not that half, 25% never go back to work. My record for an income protection claim that I know about, because I don't know about all the claims that my clients have put in, one of my clients had a car crash and didn't work for 3 years and 5 months. What didn't kill him, so his life cover didn't pay out. It wasn't a critical illness, so his critical illness didn't pay out, but he didn't work for 3 years and 5 months. Unfortunately, we protected his income. At the end of 3 years and 5 months, his lifestyle was still there. Okay. As part of this document, as you'll see, I talk to clients about what they get work benefits. I've got a fairly good knowledge in my head of most big companies' work benefits. I've been doing this 23 years. And if someone, say, is self-employed, I'll say to them, okay, so if you had the car crash last week that my client had and you couldn't work, how long could you manage for financially before you need to put money into your bank account to pay your mortgage and bills? So you can obviously spin quite nicely into your financial plan as to what would they need to keep the income stream going, so they haven't got to use their savings. Also part of this document, because I do write lots of protection, I do deal with insurers on a daily basis, is, are they waiting for any tests or investigations? Are they on any medication? Is there any family history I know about? And I actually talk about BMI. So I ask lots and lots of clients how tall they are and what they weigh. And I haven't had a client yet who's refused to speak to me or refused to answer me.
I think, Colin, that if we about that, that's a great series of stats for people where you've talked about the impact of the income.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's the perfect point to flip over to John, if we may.
Am I boring you, Ian?
No, but I've got to keep things going on. No, you're full of great facts, but tremendous experiences there. But we do need to get on to John and let John show.
After all,
the heading of the session was showing it with cash flow planning, so I do need to bring cash flow planning in.
John's gonna
talk, and then after that, I'm gonna actually bring Matt Chapman in, who has now joined us. Matt's gonna talk to you about some of the practical things around giving protection advice, and particularly for Matt, it's going to be around why price is irrelevant once you look at quality. But John, do you want to give us the background to what you do and then show us how you work your magic?
Well, thank you. And thank you for setting me up with magic. Please excuse the husky voice, everybody. At recent trip to Egypt, I brought the camel flu back with me. So hopefully I'll be gone soon enough. I'm known as the Cashflow Ninja. That might seem a little pretentious, but people gave me that name. I didn't give it to myself. And effectively, I build and I correct and I sense check and I coach and I train all things cash flow. I do this across various companies. I do it internationally, and I've been doing it probably for about 8 years now, although I've got 30 years in financial services, most of that in banking. In terms of the software that I use primarily is Voyant, but I will say this, there are many fantastic pieces of software out there. And Ian knows that one of my phrases is, it's not the car, it's the driver. It's how you use the software that is vital. Okay, because the softwares, they're really very, very good. They'll demonstrate and show what you need to do. They have different functionalities, but they're all very, very good. So today I'm going to show you Voyant, but I've worked with IntelliFlow. I've worked with Xplan, looking closely at Dynamic Planner as a new kind of drive. They looks very, very good. So all of this sort of stuff. What I'm going to show you today is the world that I occupy, which is this. I'm going to share my screen. Hopefully, just confirm, Ian, that that's come through nice and clear.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah, good vision. Fabulous.
So what you'll recognize if you're doing cash flow modeling consistently is that most softwares have a dashboard where you capture all the information. Now, there are three things personally that for me define a good cash flow model. The wrapper for that is data, but the three things are income, assets, and expenses. Right. Now, the thing is, income and assets are pretty easy, because it's a pay slip and it's a balance sheet. The harder one is expenditure, and Colin has expanded quite nicely on the depth to which he goes. The thing for me in the phrase that if anybody wants to walk away with a good phrase is expenses are a cash flow killer. If you get them wrong, the model has no value whatsoever. So there is work to be done around that, and I'm going to show you when I get to the expenses section. But this is for me. I built this a while ago as an example. We have a young couple, 30 and 28. They've got a child. They've got a mortgage. They're earning decent money. And by the way, the scales on these all expand. So if somebody's earning £150,000 a year, well, the expenditure, generally speaking, expands with it. So, you know, the need is equally as strong, if not stronger. They've not accumulated much. I'm going to zoom through these, Ian, because I just want to get to the charts, but I want to just create the background. So they started to accumulate. They've got some regular savings going on. They've got a house with a mortgage paid off in about 20, 25 years. They're contributing to workplace pension schemes. And we're going to assume that they're going to work long enough to get maximum state pensions. So all that's well and good, because it's information that we readily have to hand. A bank statement, a mortgage statement, a payslip. The key is this bit, and I know Colin expanded on this, but let me just kind of press home on this a little bit. So this client here, we've broken them down into three, five or six headings. but that's come from a comprehensive data capture. This is from a kind of a client I've worked with and similar clients I've worked with. But you need to break them down, because first of all, we need to know what is the essential, what is required, what can't you get away from. But then we've also got to create the nice stuff, the stuff that has some emotional content, taking little Johnny away on holiday, being able to take that relaxation time. So create something that's worth saving. That's the key. A model that's worth saving. Now, this model has yet to go into aspirational retirement goals, but this is, I just want to show you, in my world, that's not untypical for a relatively young client. Obviously, the older people get, the more we would see potentially a higher bank of assets. So the model here would look something like this. Now, if you've done cash flow modeling fairly well, you recognize the model. Fairvoyant blue is good, red is not so good. Okay, but I'm a great believer in when the red kicks in, are you bothered? And in this case, the red is kicking in with some set assumptions that are around about 86, 84. So you're almost at ONS mortality rates. And well, we haven't done a really strategic model. We've just said what you're currently saving and what you're currently spending money on. So they both work till 65. Obviously, sometimes we work on early retirement models. And in this, everything's rosy. You work, no interruptions to work. You spend some of your savings when you retire, you get your state pensions and you draw on your pension pots. That's not untypical for a model. The thing is, that's the model I build nearly all the time. A nice, clean accumulation of assets through regular premiums, uninterrupted. A bit like somebody who's got a buy-to-let property who rents it out 12 months of the year with no interruption for 40 years. In reality, that doesn't really happen. So I'm going to show you in this model what happens if I introduce a disability. So all I'm going to do is I'll do what if, and I'll just say test disability. Obviously, I would make it something a little bit more pertinent to the client, but I'm just going to do test disability. So you'll know from your own software how easy it is to potentially duplicate a model. And all I'm going to do for the sake of this particular model is go to the timeline, and I'm going to say in roughly 4 years' time, I'm going to introduce a disability. All I've done is click one button, and then I'm going to say